Imagine walking into a casino, right? You walk up to the roulette table and you realize the guy next to you isn't betting on red or black. He's actually betting on the wheel itself breaking.
Right.
And he's using like $1 billion of borrowed money to do it.
It sounds totally absurd, but that is actually a really accurate picture of how sophisticated finance operates under the surface today. We are so attached to this, you know, romantic narrative of the stock market.
Yeah, investing in a company you believe in, waiting for it to grow.
Exactly. But the reality at the institutional level is entirely detached from that.
Right. So today, for you, the listener, our mission on this deep dive is to completely dismantle the modern Wall Street hedge fund machine. Because that classic image of the swashbuckling lone wolf stock picker, you know, the maverick in the corner office screaming into a phone, making these gut feeling bets, that is officially dead.
Completely dead.
And to prove it and to show you what actually replaced him, we are unpacking this incredibly detailed June 2026 research briefing from the American newspaper and American TV.
Yeah, the briefing is really a wake-up call. I mean, it lays out in plain text that the hedge fund industry has evolved into this mature, industrialized risk trading machine.
Wow.
It relies on massive data infrastructure, prime broker balance sheets, and just the systematic ability to monetize volatility.
So by the end of this deep dive, you are going to understand the hidden machinery of how financial returns are actually manufactured, how they're financed, and really who is footing the bill. So let's start with the sheer scale of this machine. I know the briefing talks about a trillion-dollar pivot, but frame that for us. Just how much money is flowing into this space right now?
Well, the numbers defy almost all historical precedents. I mean, according to the data, global hedge fund assets under management hit a record $5.15 trillion at the end of 2025.
That is massive.
And it didn't stop there. Yeah. It surged past $5.22 trillion in just the first quarter of 2026.
That is an astronomical amount of capital. Just wow.
And the velocity of that capital is even more striking. We saw nearly $45 billion in net inflows just in Q1 2026 alone.
Wait, really?
Yeah, and if you combine the last two quarters, we're looking at almost $90 billion of fresh money pouring in. To put that in perspective, the briefing notes that this is the best two-quarter inflow pace the industry has seen since 2007.
Okay, let's unpack this, because to an average observer, this seems entirely counterintuitive. Historically, I mean, hedge funds were the unstable sports cars of the finance world, right? You bought them to go fast, you paid a premium, and you accepted that you might just, you know, crash into a brick wall.
Right. That was the old model.
So why are massive institutions, the people managing our retirement money, buying them at record rates today? Mm-hmm. Have they suddenly become the reliable all-terrain vehicles?
Well, what's fascinating here is you have to look at what those institutions, the pension funds, the endowments, sovereign wealth funds, what they're dealing with in the rest of their portfolios. Over the last decade, they locked up massive amounts of capital in private equity and private credit.
Okay.
But right now, in 2026, private equity exits are incredibly slow. Distributions back to investors are basically stalling out.
Oh, I see.
On top of that, private credit valuations are being heavily scrutinized, especially around those massive loans handed out to AI companies.
So their money is essentially trapped in these illiquid investments. They can't access cash when they need it.
That is the core issue. They're sitting on highly illiquid, hard-to-value private assets. They desperately need something that provides relatively liquid diversification. They basically need a shock absorber.
Got it.
The allocation case for hedge funds today is no longer about generating those wild 50% annual returns. It's about low correlation to the broader stock market. And crucially, it's about having liquidity. Hedge funds have become this liquid alternatives core, sitting right between daily traded public stock markets and those heavily restricted private funds.
Okay, so the investors are demanding this reliable all-weather performance. They want the ATV, not the sports car. But if I'm a hedge fund manager who built my whole career on taking massive risky swings, I can't just magically promise smooth risk-free returns.
No, you can't.
So how did the industry actually restructure itself to build this all-weather vehicle?
By entirely eliminating the lone wolf manager. The center of gravity has totally shifted to what the briefing calls the pod revolution. The industry is now dominated by massive multi-manager, multi-strategy platforms. We are talking about the true titans of 2026 Wall Street here.
Give us a sense of the scale of these titans. Who we're talking about?
Well, the briefing highlights firms like Citadel, managing roughly $69 billion as of March. Millennium, pushing well past $79 billion. 0.72 Belozny and D.E. Shaw with over $85 billion.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and the research refers to them not as investment funds, but as industrialized alpha platforms.
Hold on, let's define a term before we get too deep into the weeds here. Alpha platforms. You hear alpha thrown around constantly in finance. Can you clarify alpha versus beta for us? Because I think understanding that is critical to understanding what these platforms are actually selling.
Absolutely. It is the most important distinction in investing. Beta is simply the natural upward drift of the broader stock market. If the S&P 500 goes up 10% this year and you bought an index fund, your 10% return is beta.
Right. Any monkey can get beta.
Exactly. It requires zero skill to capture. Alpha, on the other hand, is the return generated strictly by the manager's unique skill, entirely independent of what the broader market is doing. If the market is down 5%, but a manager's portfolio goes up 5%, that manager has generated pure alpha.
Got it. So these massive firms are claiming they have built factories that produce pure alpha. How does the pod system actually achieve that?
By dividing and conquering. The overarching platform provides the central infrastructure, right? The data feeds, the technology. They then hire hundreds of small independent teams of traders. These are the pods.
Okay.
A portfolio manager, or PM, is given a specific capital allocation for their pod. But they operate on an incredibly short leash, controlled by what are called strict factor constraints.
Factor constraints. Okay, explain that to me like I'm a five-year-old.
Sure. Imagine you are managing a pod focused on the automotive industry. You think Ford is going to have a great year and General Motors is going to have a terrible year. So you buy Ford stock and you short sell GM stock.
Meaning I bet the GM's stock price will fall.
Yes, exactly. A factor constraint dictates that your overall bet must remain completely neutral to the wider auto industry, neutral to interest rate changes, and neutral to the broader stock market.
Wow. Yeah.
You aren't allowed to make a bet on whether the stock market as a whole goes up or down. Your only allowed source of profit is the specific price difference between Ford and GM. The central platform mathematically enforces this.
And what happens if the portfolio manager gets it wrong? What if Ford plummets and GM skyrockets?
The platform enforces rigid stop-loss rules. If a pod loses a predetermined amount of money, say 3 to 5% of their allocated capital, Sarai's, they are simply cut off.
Just fired.
Well, the central computer systems automatically liquidate their positions. It is totally ruthless. But by combining hundreds of these neutral pods and automatically cutting the losers, the overarching platform mathematically limits the drawdown for the whole firm.
Okay, it sounds like a beautifully engineered machine. But here is where it gets really contentious, and I have to push back on behalf of the listener.
Yeah.
Because according to this briefing, the way these platforms charge their clients has completely mutated. The traditional hedge fund model was 2 and 20, right? A 2% management fee and a 20% cut of the profit.
All right, the classic model.
But the briefing says that is basically dead, replaced by something called pass-through expenses. Explain pass-through fees.
Pass-through fees mean the investor directly pays for the operating costs of the hedge fund.
Wait, hold on. I'm reading this right out of the briefing. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that investors are voluntarily paying to cover the portfolio manager's multi-million dollar compensation.
Yes.
They're paying for the firm's server farms, the Bloomberg terminal subscriptions, the alternative data feeds, the legal bills, the rent. I mean, the investor is just handing the firm a blank check for operating expenses on top point of giving them a massive cut of the profits.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal deal for the hedge fund. And yes, it can materially raise the total fee load on the investor well beyond the old 2% standard.
And D, at the exact same time, these funds are locking the investor's money up for years. The report explicitly mentions D.E. Shaw extending investor lockups for up to 4 years in 2026. This just defies logic to me. Investors are paying drastically more in hidden fees. They are accepting zero transparency into what the individual pods are actually trading. Indeed, they are letting their money be locked in a vault for 4 years.
It's wild, I know.
Why on earth are sophisticated billion-dollar pension funds agreeing to what sounds like an absolute shakedown?
Well, it looks terrible on paper, but the institutions are participating in what the industry calls the new bargain. The underlying reality of modern finance is that capital is no longer the scarcest resource. Capital is incredibly abundant right now.
So what is scarce?
The absolute scarcest resource on Wall Street today is top-tier portfolio manager talent, the brilliant quantitative engineers, the data scientists, the people who can actually extract that pure alpha from the market.
And those people are not working out of their garages.
They completely refuse to. They want to work at Citadel or Millennium because those platforms have the deepest pockets, the best execution technology, and the highest compensation structures. So the pension funds are willingly swallowing this bitter pill.
Right.
They accept the higher costs, the total opacity, and the long lockups in exchange for access to that capacity-constrained talent pool. They are paying a massive premium because they believe this industrialized machine is literally the only way to get that reliable all-weather return.
All right, let's follow the logic here because I think there's a massive hole in this strategy.
Okay, let's hear it.
We just established that these pods operate on an incredibly short leash. They are heavily constrained, forced to be market neutral, and cut off the second they lose a tiny percentage of their capital.
Correct.
If you constrain risk that tightly, your returns should theoretically be quite small. How on earth do they generate returns high enough to justify these massive, bloated pass-through fees? Like, where's the extra money coming from?
Ah, that is the exact question that exposes the hidden plumbing of the entire industry. The extra money, the juice that makes the returns acceptable, comes from leverage. And you simply cannot understand leverage without understanding prime brokers.
Right. The briefing explicitly says prime brokers are not just service providers. They are the balance sheet layer. So explain what a prime broker actually is.
Most people assume a hedge fund takes $1 billion from investors and just goes out to buy $1 billion worth of stocks.
That's what I assumed.
It's a fundamental misunderstanding. Prime brokers are specialized divisions within massive investment banks like Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley. They act as the financing engine. They lend the securities so the hedge funds can short sell. They provide complex financial derivatives. And most importantly, they extend the leverage.
Meaning they loan the hedge fund, borrowed money, to magnify their bets. The briefing points out something called synthetic exposure through complex swaps. Stop there. Explain a swap to me like I'm 5 years old, because this sounds like a way to hide risk.
A swap is essentially a side bet with the prime broker. Instead of the hedge fund buying 1 million shares of Apple stock, the hedge fund goes to the prime broker and says, "Let's make a contract. If the price of Apple goes up, you pay me the difference. If it goes down, I pay you."
Oh, I see. So the hedge fund gets all the financial gain of owning the stock without actually having to put up the massive amount of cash to buy the actual stock.
Exactly. The prime broker holds the stock on their own balance sheet, freeing up the hedge fund to take that cash and make 20 other bets. It is a highly efficient way to use leverage. But the briefing cites Goldman Sachs data showing that in May 2026, this hedge fund leverage hit a 5-year high.
Wow. And a massive chunk of that borrowed money isn't diversified. The report highlights intense systemic crowding into the AI crowd, specifically semiconductors and large cap tech. So everyone is borrowing money from the prime brokers to make the exact same bets on the exact same AI companies.
Which introduces terrifying systemic fragility. When you use leverage, your gains are amplified, but your sensitivity to a margin call becomes extreme.
Let me try an analogy here, because I want to make sure I understand the actual mechanics of a margin call.
Yeah.
If I buy a stock with my own cash and it drops 5%, I just wait for it to recover.
Right.
But a margin call with prime broker leverage, is it more like flipping a house?
That is an excellent way to look at it. Let's build on that.
Okay, so say I want to buy a $1 million house to flip. I only put down $50,000 of my own cash, and I borrow $950,000 from the bank.
Yep.
If the housing market drops by just 5%, the house is now worth $950,000. My entire $50,000 down payment is effectively wiped out.
Completely gone.
The bank panics,
yeah,
realizes I have zero equity left, and forces me to sell the house today at a loss just to pay back their loan. I don't just lose 5%, I lose everything, and I am forced to sell at the absolute worst possible time.
That is exactly the mechanism of a margin call. Now, apply that to our hedge fund pods. If a macroeconomic shock hits and that crowded AI semiconductor stock drops by a few percentage points, the pod's leverage magnifies that loss. They hit their strict internal stop loss limit.
The computer just forces them to sell.
Yes. But because of the crowding we discussed, 100 other pods at 12 other multi-manager platforms also hit their stop loss limits on that exact same stock at the exact same millisecond.
Oh, man. They all dump the stock simultaneously.
Which causes the stock price to plummet even faster.
Which triggers even more stop losses.
Exactly. The prime brokers see this massive volatility. They get nervous about the billions in leverage they've extended across the industry, and they issue margin calls. They demand their cash back. Forced selling begets more forced selling. The prime broker financing is the oxygen in the room, and when they pull it out, the strategy suffocates.
So the very thing designed to save the platforms, the strict, centralized stop-loss rules, is actually the exact thing that could destroy the broader market when everyone tries to use it at the same time.
That is the paradox of risk control. Individually rational behavior becomes collectively disastrous. And the briefing provides a brilliant case study of this by comparing March 2026 to May 2026. They call it the Tale of Two Regimes.
Walk us through the timeline. What happened in March?
So in March 2026, the market was hit by severe geopolitical turbulence regarding the Middle East and Iran. Traditional stock picking funds faced real drawdowns, losing about 4.3% because human managers panicked or were caught off guard.
Right.
However, the systematic algorithm-driven pod platforms largely survived unscathed. They were strictly neutral to the broader market panic, and they actually eked out a 1.1% gain.
So the machine worked. It protected the capital. But then we get to May.
Right. The geopolitical fears recede, and a massive AI-led equity rally explodes. The exact same pods that played it safe in March aggressively bought into the May rally at the fastest pace since June 2025. Stock-picking funds gained 5.35% in May.
Add in the Fed's target range in April, what was it, 3.5 to 3.75%? That created some macro opportunities through rate path uncertainty.
Exactly.
So the lesson from the briefing is that the sophisticated risk models are incredibly effective at handling predictable historical correlations. But they become weapons of mass destruction when an unprecedented macroeconomic shock hits a universally crowded trade fueled by five-year high leverage.
Precisely. The returns are completely regime dependent. A machine calibrated for sunny weather can hydroplane when a flash flood hits.
Wow. So if I'm an institutional allocator, say I'm running a teacher's pension fund, how do I survive this? How do I spot the landmines if everything is hidden behind a four-year lockup and total opacity? The final section of the briefing covers this due diligence radar. Historically, due diligence was just staring at a chart and asking, did you beat the market last year?
Yeah, that question is practically irrelevant in 2026. The new mandate for due diligence asks, how was the return produced, financed, crowded, hedged, and paid for?
Right.
We already discussed separating alpha from beta. You never pay hedge fund pass-through fees for basic beta exposure. But the next critical metric on the radar is leverage-adjusted returns.
Expand on that, because a 10% return is a 10% return on paper, right?
Only on paper. A 10% return generated by a manager finding deeply undervalued companies and buying them with pure cash is a resilient, high-quality return. A 10% return generated by taking average companies and applying 5x leverage through prime broker swaps is a ticking time bomb.
It looks identical on a glossy marketing brochure, but the downside risk profile is massive.
Exactly. Due diligence today requires tearing apart the balance sheet to see how much prime broker oxygen is inflating the balloon.
And the briefing also highlights a few operational tripwires, right? Liquidity terms, meaning if things go south, are there hidden clauses, gates, or side pockets that allow the manager to legally trap my capital?
You're right.
Operational risk, who's actually verifying the valuations of these complex swap contracts.
Yeah.
But the most fascinating risk on the radar to me, the one that seems to threaten this entire multi-strategy model, is capacity decay.
Yes. Capacity decay is the dark side of the pod revolution's success. It is the fundamental law of gravity in finance. Alpha simply does not scale endlessly.
So the magic disappears when the fund gets too massive.
It inevitably degrades. Think of finding true alpha, like finding a $100 bill on the sidewalk.
Okay.
If you have a brilliant quantitative team with $50 million, they can quietly walk around picking up those bills without anyone noticing. It yields a massive percentage return.
Right.
But what happens when that fund grows and they suddenly have to deploy $5 billion into that exact same strategy?
I mean, they aren't looking for one bill anymore. They need to find 50,000 $100 bills on the sidewalk.
And when you start deploying billions of dollars to capture a tiny pricing anomaly, your sheer size moves the market. You alert all the other algorithms. The anomaly is erased before you can fully exploit it. The more money a platform hoards, the harder it becomes to generate high returns.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Even if you aren't dropping $1 billion into Citadel tomorrow, this briefing is essentially a masterclass in evaluating complex systems. It teaches you that you can't just stare at the shiny final output. You have to look under the hood. You have to ask what fuels it, who holds the debt, and what hidden risks are lurking in the basement.
That is the ultimate takeaway. Producing a high return in a vacuum is easy if you borrow enough money. Understanding the hidden industrialized machinery that produced the number is the actual survival skill.
We've covered a massive amount of ground today. We started with a $1 trillion pivot, driven by institutions desperate for a liquid shock absorber. We dismantled the potshop revolution, where the lone wolf manager was replaced by industrialized platforms with ruthless factor constraints and those exorbitant pass-through fees.
Yep.
We climbed down into the hidden plumbing of prime brokers, recognizing that swap leverage combined with AI crowding creates the paradox of risk control. And finally, we mapped out the new due diligence radar, learning to spot capacity decay and separate true alpha from levered beta.
The landscape has industrialized faster than regulators or average investors fully comprehend.
Which leaves us with one final, deeply provocative thought based on everything in this research. If these multi-strategy mega platforms are continually gathering all the world's capital,
yeah,
and if they're using their unlimited pass-through fees to buy up all the exclusive alternative data feeds, and if they're successfully locking up the absolute smartest quantitative talent on the planet,
they eventually reach a saturation point.
Exactly. Do they eventually stop beating the market and simply become the market?
Yeah.
I mean, if every pod is trading against another pod, using the exact same prime broker leverage, looking at the exact same data and utilizing the exact same automatic stop-loss algorithms, where does the real alpha hide next?
That is the ultimate frontier. When the machine becomes perfectly efficient, the only edge left might be in the human elements, the qualitative nuances, or the dark corners of the market that the machine is mathematically programmed to ignore.
The cinematic lone wolf with his gut feelings might be dead, replaced by a hum of servers and highly regimented pod shops. But as we've learned today, an X-ray of a complex machine can look clean, but financial markets are inherently chaotic. And even the most sophisticated trillion-dollar structure on Earth is only as stable as the leverage that fuels it and the crowd that surrounds it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking the tough questions, keep looking under the hood, and we'll catch you next time.